I believe we have one matter left on the agenda here. Mr. McKay, Mid-Atlantic Regional Planning Body. I'm still pointing.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
To be here, I wanted to give you just a quick update on what the state and the region is doing with ocean planning. And as you're all perfectly well aware, things are getting really busy out there. We have an offshore wind farm planned in Virginia about 25 miles off Virginia Beach. We have Panama Canal expansion, so bigger ships, more ships coming in, increasing pressures on fishing, as you all are really well aware of. And so there's been a need bubbling up across the country for some sort of ocean planning. In the past, it's really just been the federal government, and you're used to dealing with just 3 miles inland, and this area 3 miles out has been federal purview. But some recent developments are changing that, and one of those is in the Mid-Atlantic, we established something called MARCO, the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council on the Ocean, under a governor's agreement. The five governors, Virginia up through New York, passed this agreement when Governor Kane was here. And we've continued the effort. And MARCO set out 4 priorities that we wanted to focus on as a region, feeling that we'd be stronger as a region than a separate state dealing with the federal government. And so these 4 are up here, so energy, habitat, water quality, and regional climate adaptation. So those were the basic 4 priorities of MARCO. And then, and that was, again, 2009 that we started that. In 2010, the President signed an executive order with establishing a national ocean policy, and it called for the creation of regional planning bodies. And so ours in the Mid-Atlantic was just established a year ago, and again, it includes the 5 MARCO states plus Pennsylvania is invited in. And then you have the representatives from each of the relevant federal agencies, as well as the Fishery Management Council, and there's a spot for tribal representation. And in the Mid-Atlantic, only the Shinnecock Indians in Long Island are nationally recognized. So so they sit on there as well. And John now has taken over Jack Travelstead's place as one of 2 of Virginia's state reps to the RPD. And the second seat is being considered. We're not sure who that will be yet. But so we have these efforts going on, and one of the reasons MARCO is so closely involved is that we considered ocean planning as a tool to help address 2 of our priorities, the offshore energy siting, as well as habitat protection. So given that, we decided the first thing we needed to do was create some sort of mapping portal. And so we used that build it and they will come philosophy, and we launched our portal in December 2010. You all can go visit it, and I'll give you the web address in a second. But basically, just wanted a place where you could see all of the maps that pertain to the existing uses of the ocean and the resources. And one thing, and here's the way to get to it. If you go to midatlanticocean.org, that's MARCO's website, go to the data portal, and that will launch you to this page. And my colleague Jay Odell is going to talk more in a minute about ocean, some of the mapping efforts that we're doing. But you can go in here and launch the Marine Planner. You can see at the bottom that those 3 buttons take you to 3 different places. The Learn button just tells you the 7 different sectors that we're dealing with, and I'll show you those in a second. Explore shows you information about data gaps and priorities that we have. And Visualize launches the planner, or you can just use the button at the top. And so you get there and it looks like this, and I just turned on a few different layers to give you a sense of what's out there and what's in the portal. We have a lot of good data. Here I've just pulled up some information on gillnets. You can see it's pretty gross, large-scale information. We've got the, you can barely see it, but the 3-mile boundary is in there. We have the whale protection area at the mouth of the bay. You can see the wind farm in green down there. And you start overlaying all these things and you get a sense of the complexity of what's happening. The big purple area is the Wallops crash zone for the rocket launches. So there's a lot of restrictions out there already, and so it's been important to have a place where you can go and see it all. So filling the data gaps is why we're here, especially today, and we've identified quite a few of them. There's a lot of biological information. You'd be surprised what we don't know about things like whale migration corridors. Where are they? Seabirds, where are they? Corals and cold water corals are a really important habitat, both on the shelf and in the canyons that cut into the continental slope. So we've been working on filling data gaps, and one of the gaps in human uses that we have is recreational use. And so we actually started doing some what we call participatory mapping workshops, and we did them in Virginia in 2012, and we mapped 22 different recreational uses, which includes some fishing uses, as well as things like snorkeling and diving, waterfowl hunting. So this is just an example of the fishing with motorized vessels, and here's charter small vessels. So these were done, these workshops, to develop this data on the 22 different uses in all five states in the Mid-Atlantic, and our contractor for MARCO is working on stitching those all together so we have a seamless layer that we can put on the MARCO portal. In the meantime, since we finished ours in Virginia, we put them on our state portal, which is called Coastal Gems, and you can get to it with that address up there, because we didn't want to just sit on it for a couple of years until the others were done. So if you're interested, you can go to Coastal Gems and see that map. But we've also been working as a region on two other surveys that will help us understand where recreational uses are happening. There's a boater survey that we've done in New England that's been repeated in the Mid-Atlantic, and there's also the Surf Rider Foundation has done a survey of recreational uses. And so all three of those, our workshops with participatory mapping included, will go up on the MARCO portal hopefully later this summer, and you can see that. We've also been working with the ports and the shipping industry to refine some of the AIS data, the automatic identifier system on ships, to really refine what's happening with ships coming in and out of the mouth of the bay and up our Atlantic coast. And engaging commercial fishers is one of the gaps we're working on right now that we wanted to especially talk with you more about today. And so in a nutshell, what we're trying to do, because the vessel trip report data that NOAA collects, the federal agency, is on such gross scale, and there's a lot of controversy amongst fishermen about the adequacy of that data, we've been working with a fellow at Rutgers who takes that NOAA trip report data, combines it with vessel permit data, so you know what ports people are coming from, and they're mapping where most of the fishing days are occurring. So you're getting a sense of the importance of the home ports, and they call this a community at sea approach. There's other ways you can map it using, you know, dollar value and so forth, but and actually BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, is working on that. But we felt it was important to the communities, especially for us in Virginia, to understand. And so with that, I'll stop for a second, see if you have any questions. I just blasted a lot at you. But Jay Odell is going to come up. There you go. Come on up, Jay. I'll introduce you. Jay Odell is actually with the Nature Conservancy, but under contract to us at MARCO. And I'll let you load yours and see if they does anyone have any questions about why we're doing this. It's been a fascinating endeavor for us. I'm with the Coastal Zone Management Program, and we're used to just dealing with things on coastal land and our coastal waters within 3 miles. So it was actually a lot of the Coastal Zone programs that got together to form MARCO. So it's been pretty fascinating to connect with what's happening out in the ocean, and for the states to have a seat at the table now in terms of what federal agencies have had sole jurisdiction.
I think it's important to note that this is not a regulatory body. This is not an organization that will dictate how the oceans are used, who gets precedent for what. This is a planning tool. We don't know how to prepare for the future until we know how the oceans are being used currently is in effect, but what we're looking at here.
And I should say, too, we had some public listening sessions recently, and Norfolk John came with us, and they were there, too. And we had some interesting comments from the public about this, and one of those was that they really want us to make those connections between what happens in state waters versus what happens offshore in the ocean. So we're delighted to be here today, and hope you can help guide us. So I'll just turn it over to you, Jay.
Thank you, Laura.
Jay, I have no doubt you're going to wow us, because I know you've been collecting a ton of information.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you, Commissioner Bull, and members of the commission. And I don't know about the wow, but I am grateful that Laura provided some context, so we're not just sort of stepping it out of the blue and let's map commercial fishing. I work as part of a team that includes a couple of universities and a software development group, and so I'm presenting on behalf of that group. Laura mentioned Kevin St. Martin, who's been working in this general field of mapping commercial fishing effort from sort of an anthropological perspective for well over a decade. So we're sort of building on that foundation that he created. I won't dwell on this, but the point I was trying to make with this image, you've seen something similar in Laura's show, is just that we have really pretty high resolution data for a lot of the really important uses, like the shipping, which is something like $3.8 billion a day in trade nationally, and the wind energy area. And Laura shared with you how the progress that's being made in recreational uses of the ocean and mapping that, which is sort of astounding in a way that until the last couple of years, there was really no good maps of where people do things in the ocean for recreational use. And this is a zoom in, same scene. This is the best available data to us right now for commercial fishing. We have it by different gear types. This is gill nets, but anyone who's spent some time on the water, well, knows that there's a lot of variation within each one of those blocks, which are about 100 square miles each. So this data might be useful when zoomed way out. It'll show some patterns that look true, but pretty much useless for ocean planning or, you know, helping people to make eyes wide open decisions by being able to see where people do things. So this was our challenge. We have Kevin, Dr. St. Martin at Rutgers, has a special arrangement with NIMS where he works under their supervision to take what are highly confidential data and scrub it according to some NIMS protocols and get it to a point where we can take, we can make these heat maps. I guess I would say that, it's a very large database. There are, there's something like 2.1 million records in this database. And fishermen and people who are familiar with fisheries know that any given one of these 2.1 million dots could be way off. But together, they really do start to create a picture that means something. And you have to sort of disregard, like this dot here I figure is probably on the New Jersey Turnpike. Probably somebody wasn't actually fishing there. But overall, it creates a picture of what's happening in the ocean. So you can't read the title, but this particular image, which is just an example, shows all ports for the eastern seaboard from Virginia to Maine combined, their fishing effort combined, and really just looks at people who are bottom trawling with boats 65 feet and larger. So that's what that shows. I mentioned the protocols for mapping. The sort of clever trick that Kevin does with this data is he links it with the permitting database, which allows pulling in a metric for the crew that's on board the vessel. So the heat maps are not showing money or just number of days fished, but actual labor that a segment of a community spends at a specific place in the ocean. The communities are something that we initially developed based on what the data looks like and what makes sense given our work in fisheries, quite a few years, but really needs to be refined in dialogue with fishing communities, actual fishermen, people who still have their hand on the wheel, to really make sure that the maps make sense to them. So at this stage, we are just sort of on the brink of going out, meeting in small groups with members of the industry to get their thoughts on the maps. What's missing, what is the important message, what are the important messages that should go along with interpretation of these maps, because there's a lot of that. So just a few examples. This is the same image I showed before, the large boats for all ports fishing with bottom trawls. This is the smaller boats fishing with bottom trawls. So you can see there's the larger boats appear to go more out onto the shelf edge, and the smaller boats focus more inshore and closer to ports. Not surprising. Now, there's a mind-numbing array of different maps I could show you. When you think about a dozen major ports on the East Coast and 27 gear types, which we can combine into different, you know, categories. You could look at sink gill nets and regular gill nets, or different kinds of, you know, several different kinds of trawls, midwater and bottom, and so on. So I just wanted to show you a few local examples. In Virginia, based on the Federal Vessel Trip Report database, some of the biggest ports are Virginia Beach, Hampton, Newport News, Chincoteague. That's not an all-encompassing list, but those are some of the ones that really jumped out. Here we have the other thing that most of you, but maybe not all of you, are familiar with what the VTR system is and what it records and doesn't record. It really only is required for fishermen who are fishing under a federal permit. So it includes a little bit of, it'll include some fishing effort, some activity inside the 3-mile line, but there's going to be some elements that are missing as well in the ocean that we need to address. So this shows the Hampton. So this is the scallop fleet out of Hampton. And their primary footprint, which you can see they range pretty far and wide. I'll point out again that I mentioned the element of time. We have this database going back to 1995. This just shows the last 3 years. So the time is another element that we want to explore with the fishermen, see what makes sense to them. Based on some initial discussions, fishermen seem to want to really show where they've been over a longer time period. And when we just started to analyze the data, but it looks like you can see whole kind of fishing communities and areas disappearing over the years. And so we want to try to capture that information as well. This is just another sort of semi-random example. This is the gillnet boats out of landing in Virginia Beach last 3 years. You can see that they kind of straddle this the 3-mile line in terms of this sort of area of activity here. You can't see probably with this line thickness. We're still working on the cartography for these maps, but there's a line that goes like this, and all the maps can have these lines. This is a little bit down in the weeds, but that's what we call the percent volume contour, and that's basically 75% of all the effort on one of these maps falls within that tighter, more tightly circumscribed area. So this is pots and traps. We really want to talk about these data because we know it's missing some whelk or conch fishing activity, but includes some where boats are carrying federal permits. So that's the quick tour of the data. There's a lot of other maps that I'm going to spare you. But there's a lot of interesting ways to look at this information. This is just an example of the data from Ocean City, Maryland, which shows the ground fishing or bottom trawling footprint in green, and pots and traps areas shown in with a red circle, and so on, the different gear types. So you can kind of get a sense of what how the different gear groups overlap in places. One thing that I wanted to emphasize a little bit with this approach is, as Laura pointed out, there's another effort underway which we're collaborating and in close contact with the investigators on to map the money, and that's really aimed at potentially at thinking about potential compensation schemes down the road if wind power gets developed, and if those are two big ifs, fishermen are displaced. We're mindful that just mapping where the highest value is isn't the only thing that is important, and so we think we know that there might be a little area, and this is not necessarily, you know, this area, but there are small areas that are really important during some particular season. That might be the area where someone makes their boat payment because they're able to go there, but it might not pop out as a super valuable place. So we want to try to find those places too. And that's all I have.
Thank you. That's very helpful and very informative. I applaud you for your work, Jay. I know it's been extensive.
Thank you.
Other questions or thoughts from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
Jay, and maybe this is for Laura too, but the Marcos Group, what is the ultimate goal that you all would see for use of this data? You know, how would it be used and by whom?
Right. I think by all kinds of people. And one thing that the regional planning body is struggling with right now and has got public comment on was a plan. Should they develop a plan? We have a plan, I would say, already, de facto. How we're using the ocean now is our current plan. But we're still struggling with that. If we create an official plan, what would it look like, and how would we update it? There'd be a whole, you know, adaptive management kind of process that would go along with it. So I think it would be used for things like the fine-scale sighting of the wind turbines, and especially some of the fishing data will be really important. Some of the coral data will be really important. For shipping, we know that, because we've spoken with the Harbor Pilot Association, they've got their eye on an area that they'd like to have officially designated as a channel that runs kind of north-south, called Cooper's Channel. And so the idea is that you have this portal and you bring the sectors in and you talk together, and it gives you a way to negotiate how the space can be used most efficiently and effectively. So it's a really multi-sector, comprehensive approach that we've never had before. Everything in the ocean has been done piecemeal, agency by agency, decision by decision. So this is our first time ever chance to look at the big picture and try to do better and make sure that all of the uses that we want are accommodated. And it's especially important, I think, for the physician community, because it's hard. It's hard for them to have a very big, strong voice against something like the shipping industry or the wind energy industry. So I hope that answers.
Well, so a follow-up question.
Yeah,
so how does this kind of model, I guess, or portal, data portal, take into account new or up-and-coming industries that may not be there, for example, offshore aquaculture?
Right. I mean, as soon as we get data on it, we'll have a place to put it.
I mean, it's a great question, because I think we could probably be safe in saying in 5 or 10 years from now, we'll be probably talking about offshore aquaculture and 2 or 3 other things that aren't even on our radar right now. So certainly there's a place to put information, but we also sort of have an R&D wing of our work where we're trying to, you know, to think about, well, how would we define, appropriate areas for offshore aquaculture. One of the exciting things that we're doing now is working with Department of Defense, and they are starting to code up, if you will, a grid for the ocean that sort of indicates their degree of comfort or compatibility with different kinds of uses. We're thinking about what criteria would be for offshore floating wind technology, which may be just around the corner. Just to follow on a little bit to your first question, I mean, I personally think it would be great if this regional planning body developed a more coordinated approach to ocean planning that brought in the state views and all the multiple agencies and created some kind of a plan. But even if they don't do that, I think that there's a real value in just surfacing good information so that people can make these eyes wide open kind of decisions. We're seeing that a little bit with an interest from the Coast Guard in using this information as they just redesign the shipping lanes for the East Coast. We provided a sort of a helping role to the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council for a coral protection amendment that they were working at, trying to solve the problem of how can you protect some deep sea corals without unnecessarily restricting the squid fishery. So those kinds of puzzles are, I think there's a puzzle solving ability that can be useful.
Yeah, I agree. It certainly brings issues, you know, to light that may not have been you know, observed, you know, previously. So.
If I could take a minute to
Yeah, please.
Very interested. If any of you offline afterwards have specific ideas for us about people that we should really be talking with, we have a list of commercial fishing advisors who we're working with. Some names that Rick Robbins and others gave us, but the more, the better.
Ms. Erskine,
I just have one other question. The presentation was very interesting, but you mentioned the ocean water quality, but didn't really touch on that. What aspect of that are you actually interested in? The reason I ask is there's been kind of a movement from Maine to Virginia and certainly out on the West Coast to look at ocean / estuarine acidification and those impacts, and there's quite a bit of work being done in that realm. So.
Mitigation, which is beyond the purview of Marco, most likely. There's informed adaptation, being able to predict a little bit better what's coming and how we might respond to it to minimize the impact, which connects to the need for OA ocean acidification sensors. And there's some interesting work going on in that space now. So the other thing we didn't talk about is how fish populations are moving in response to climate change and warming. The Nature Conservancy has invested about $250,000 into some new research that will be available in about a year and a half that we're basically funding a position at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center of NOAA to look at that question, to be able to map how fish are moving. So that information will likely end up getting folded into these efforts.
Anyone else? Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your time today.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks.